So throughout our lives, we're all going to experience bad news from at one point in our lives or another. Maybe it's every day, or maybe it's only periodically. It could be the loss of a job. It could be financial problems personally. Maybe if you own a business, you've got problems with your business, with employees, or with your financials. Or maybe it's the death of a friend or family member. Of course, these are all difficult times that we may face in our lives that can cause stress, family difficulties, uncertainty in our own lives, or even doubting our faith. So what we're going to focus on for a few minutes this evening is how Christians should handle bad news and what the Bible has to say about that. So before we begin our study tonight, let's think about the last time that you got a piece of bad news. Now, sometimes bad news is inconsequential. For example, your team lost the game last night. Or maybe you got a flat tire on your way to work. In the scheme of things, not that important. Sometimes we get more important bad news, like a bad health diagnosis, or maybe we hear that someone we cared about has passed away. So when you receive bad news like this, the last time you can remember, did you panic? Did you pray? Did you blame God? Did you keep your feelings bottled up inside of you and didn't share them with anyone else? So one of the things we're going to talk about tonight is, how do we deal with bad news, and what tools has God given us in the Bible for us to be able to manage bad news? So we're going to look at a few examples of different people in the Bible and how they handled bad news. We're going to talk about what the Bible teaches concerning managing bad news. The first example we're going to look at this evening is Joseph. So turn over to Genesis chapter 37. We'll start reading in verse 31. Genesis chapter 37. Starting in verse 31. And the context of this verse is, we are all familiar with the story, but just the background is that, of course, Joseph's brothers are jealous of him. Jacob shows a lot of favoritism to him, giving him this robe of many colors. Joseph has these dreams of his brothers bowing down before him. That just makes them even more upset with him. So we're going to read, we're going to pick up from the point where they've kind of had all they can take, so to speak. Starting in verse 31, then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. They sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not." And he identified and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son, mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him into Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. So some more context to this. Of course, Joseph's brothers had thrown him in this pit. They talked about killing him. Judah had the idea of, why should we kill him when we can make some money off of him? So he was sold into slavery. And as we go on to read the rest of the account of Joseph, we find that it seems like he hits rock bottom a lot of times in his life. First, he's got a family that seems to hate him. They plot to kill him. Instead, they throw him in this pit. They think so little of him that they sell him into slavery. He goes from being sold to slavery to working in Potiphar's household. Then he's falsely accused by Potiphar's wife, and he's sent into prison. So it seems like, how low can he go in his life? But despite all this, he ends up becoming incredibly successful. Now, on the other hand, we look at Jacob and how he handled this bad news. He jumped to the worst-case scenario. He saw this robe covered in blood and assumed the worst. And that was something that haunted him for years to come until he's reunited with Joseph later on. Let's look at an example of Lot and his family. Let's turn over to Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19, we'll start in verse 15. To frame this passage, Lot and his family, they started out pitching their tent towards Sodom and Gomorrah, and later they moved into the city proper, God had told Abraham he was going to destroy these cities. Abraham talks to God and convinces him that the cities won't be destroyed if he can find at least 10 righteous people in the city. Of course, we see that wasn't the case. There weren't 10 righteous people to be saved. So we'll start in verse 15, Genesis 19, verse 15. As morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city." But he lingered. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. And as they brought them out, one said, "Escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away." And Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have shown me great kindness in saving my life. But I cannot escape to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die. Behold, this city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved." He said to him, "Behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Escape there quickly, for I can do nothing till you arrive there." Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. The sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities, and all the valley, and all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. So in this passage, we didn't read the part that Lot was actually told two times that the city was going to be destroyed. He was told to warn any family that he had in the city by the angels that were staying with him. So he goes to his son-in-laws that were going to marry his daughters, and they ignored him. They thought he was kidding. So again, after he had been warned twice, it was time to go. Lot lingers after getting this bad news that the cities are going to be destroyed. And then we read that Lot's wife didn't take this bad news seriously. She turned around, ignored the angel's warning, and was turned to a pillar of salt. The next example we'll look at is King David. The passage we'll look at is 2 Samuel chapter 12. We'll start in the middle of verse 15. This passage is about the child of David's and Bathsheba's that came about of his adultery that he committed with Bathsheba. Start in the middle of verse 15. "And the Lord afflicted the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, and he became sick. David therefore sought God on behalf of the child, and David fasted and went in and lay all night on the ground. And the elders of his house stood beside him to raise him from the ground, but he would not, nor did he eat food with them. On the seventh day the child died, and the servants of David were afraid to tell him that the child was dead, for they said, 'Behold, while the child was yet alive, we spoke to him, and he did not listen to us. How then can we say to him, the child is dead? He may do himself some harm.' But when David saw that his servants were whispering together, David understood that the child was dead. And David said to his servants, 'Is the child dead?' They said, 'He is dead.' Then David arose from the earth, and washed, and anointed himself, and changed his clothes, and he went into the house of the Lord and worshipped. He then went to his own house, and when he asked, they set food before him, and he ate. Then his servants said to him, 'What is this thing that you have done? You have fasted and wept for the child while he was alive, but when the child died, you arose and ate food.' He said, 'While the child was still alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who knows whether the Lord will be gracious to me, that the child may live. But now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he will not return to me.'" So during this time of his child's illness, David takes it pretty hard. He lays on the ground, and he's out somewhere like in a courtyard. He's lying in the dirt. He doesn't get up from the dirt. He doesn't eat. He doesn't change his clothes. And once he finds out that his son has died, his son is dead, he gets up, he washes himself, he puts on clean clothing, and he goes to the house of the Lord to worship. When he comes back, he goes back to his own house, and he's ready to eat. And his servants, they don't understand. To them, he should be mourning now. His son has just died. Why is he acting like nothing has happened? And he says, but now he is dead, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? Not everybody can handle grief this way. Different people handle things differently, but this is a great example of how to handle grief. David prays when a prayer can do something. He prays to God that the child could be spared. Of course, that's not God's will. And once the child dies, he accepts the bad news that the child is dead, and he goes about his life. We're going to look at another negative example of dealing with bad news. That's the children of Israel after the spies were sent in the land of Canaan. Let's look over at Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13, starting in verse 25. So God had told Moses to send out 12 spies, one of each tribe. They go out and they scout out the land. That's where we pick up here in verse 25. At the end of 40 days, they returned from spying out the land. And they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, we came to this land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. However, the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negeb. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan. But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it. Then the men who had gone up with him said, we're not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. So they brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who are come from the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers. And so we seemed to them. So these people have been told for generations and generations that they had a great promise. There was a promise of this, of the Canaan land, that there were, this is a place where their numbers will be multiplied. But because these 10 spies brought back this negative report, they forgot everything they had been told. They didn't listen to Caleb. His voice, he was the voice of reason telling them they could definitely overtake the people of this land. Even though they were great, they had God on their side. So they ignored the truth from Caleb. And they rebelled against Moses. They rebelled against God. And the result of that, of them ignoring this bad news, they didn't verify this bad news. So because of that, no one under 25 would enter into the promised land. Over 25 would enter the promised land. The last example we're going to look at before we get into our main points is the example of Jesus when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 26. Let's pick up in verse 36. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And talking with him, Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me. And going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, so could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Again for the second time, he went away and prayed, my Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done. So Jesus was aware of his Father's plan. He knew that his death was at hand. He knew he was going to be betrayed. He prayed that this cup be passed from him. He wanted to verify this bad news, even though he knew what had to be done for our salvation. Then he followed through with his plan, even though he knew what was in store. He accepted this bad news. So we've read about from a few of these passages, a few simple steps that we can follow to verify bad news is verify, act, pray, think, talk, accept, and rejoice. Not necessarily in that order, We can follow those steps when we receive bad news. So the first step we have listed is verify. Now often bad news causes us to think of the worst case scenario, causes us a lot of times to overreact. This is what Jacob did. He saw this coat that his son had covered in blood, so Joseph must be dead. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21 says, "Prove all things, hold fast to that which is good." The next step we have in our process is act. If you get bad news, think about what you can do to improve the situation. Now, sometimes the answer is nothing. So if it's answer, you're going to go to the next step, which is pray. But if it's yes, then you need to get busy. Here's a couple of passages. We're just going to take a couple of snippets from these passages. You don't have to turn to those if you don't want to. They're up on the chart. Romans 12:11 says, "Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord." Colossians 3:23 says, "And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men." And then James chapter 4, verse 17 says, "Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." So what we see in common with these three verses is talking about action. It's talking about having activity. It doesn't mention sitting around and waiting. So if you get bad news, you need to be acting if there's something you can do about it. If there's something you can do about bad news and you're not doing anything, it's only going to get worse. So the next step we mentioned is praying. We got to remember that God wants to hear our prayers when we have difficult times. God also wants to hear our prayers when we're in good times. Prayer shouldn't be used as a life preserver. If you're on a boat, when are you going to throw one of those out? Only if someone's fallen off the boat and they're at risk of drowning. That's not the way prayer should be used. So we need to take courage that God is going to do the right thing. Let's turn over to Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18 will start at the beginning of the chapter. "And he told them a parable to the effect that they ought always to pray and not to lose heart. He said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor respected man. And there was a widow in that city who kept coming to him and saying, 'Give me justice against my adversary.' For a while he refused, but afterward he said to himself, 'Though I neither fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will give her justice, so that she will not beat me down by her continual coming.' And the Lord said, 'Hear what the unrighteous judge says. And will not God give justice to his elect who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long over them? I tell you, he will give justice to them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" So not only do we have to have faith in God to do the right thing, to do what he's promised us, we have to be humble enough to ask the Lord to help with our problems that are out of our control. Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5, we'll read verses 6 and 7. "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you." The next step in our process is thinking. And we talk about thinking, we're talking about breaking the cycle of negative thinking. When you go to a bookstore, if you still do that kind of thing, how many times do you find yourself going over to the section of negative thinking and looking at all the different books that people have written over the years about negative thinking? I don't know if you've gone to look for that section, but you probably haven't. And the reason you haven't is because you're not going to find it. Negative thinking is easy. We see a lot of books on positive thinking because that's something that's not in our nature. Like Jacob, we want to assume the worst. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8 talks about focusing on the good things. And this is how the Bible encourages us to do so. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8 says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things." We sing the song, "Count Your Blessings, Name Them One by One." And a lot of times, when you're going through difficulties in your life, that's one of the best things you can do to break that cycle of negative thinking. Think about the good things you have in your life. Think about all the physical blessings that you have, that God has blessed you with. Think about the spiritual blessings that you've been blessed with. Next step in our process we're going to discuss is talking. Talking is very therapeutic. A lot of times, especially if you're at work, you know, something happens that makes you mad. You just lost a file that you've been working on. You know, your computer crashes. What's the first thing you do? One of the first things I do is I tell the person next to me, you know what just happened to me? I was working on this for 20 minutes, and I just lost it all. And there's something about doing that, just it relieves a little bit of stress. I still have to work on it. I'm still not happy about it. But it helps just to vent a little bit. And that can go with anything, you know, whether it's at work, whether it's at home. You know, talking with your spouse, talking with your kids, it can be therapeutic and reduce some stress and anxiety. It also helps build deeper relationships. It can help build fellowship with one another. When we talk to each other and we let each other in on some personal things about us, we get to know each other a little bit better. It's a sign of caring for one another when we let someone in and tell them something personal about us. So it's definitely something that can help when we're dealing with bad news. Romans chapter 12, verse 15 says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep." So if we're not talking with each other, if we're not sharing our bad news with one another, whoever should be receiving the bad news from someone else is not going to be able to, no one's going to be able to rejoice with anybody, and no one can weep with anybody because we don't know, because we're not talking to each other. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 25 and 26. It says, "So that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it." So next step that we come to is accepting. In order to be able to handle bad news, we first have to accept it. Now, part of accepting bad news is letting go of worry. A lot of times we talk about worry or concern, and it seems like we can use those terms interchangeably. Concern is a feeling that we have that's going to drive us to action. Something is wrong, maybe in our lives. If we show concern, we're going to do something about it because it's something we have the power to control or affect the outcome. On the other hand, worrying is just senseless negative thinking. Let's look at Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. It says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. Let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." Another passage, Romans chapter 8, verse 28. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose. So regardless of how bad a situation seems to be, we need to understand that God can use these things for good. And when we recognize this, it's going to help us accepting the bad news and help us in moving forward in our life. So just a few examples of this. These are very trivial, simple examples. Think about doing dirty dishes at home. Maybe you've had some people over, and you've just got a big pile of dirty dishes in the sink or on the table. The only thing you can think about is, now I have to spend the next half hour or hour, depends if you've got a hand wash or not, washing these dishes. I wish I could be out playing golf or whatever. But think about, I'm so glad we got to have these people over and have fellowship. We're blessed to have this food that we can share with each other and have a good meal that a lot of people aren't able to enjoy. Another example, unruly children at services. Sometimes we hear a baby crying and it distracts us from services and we think, oh, I wish they would just take them out. I don't know why these kids have to cry and yell and scream. But on the other hand, we could think about how blessed we are that we've got young children in the church, children that are going to grow up in the church and are going to be the future of the church. And then lastly, we have the death of the saint. A lot of times when someone dies that's close to us, we focus on our loss. We focus on our sadness and what they meant to us. But at the same time, our loss is their gain. Maybe they were going through a sickness that affected them, causing them a lot of pain. Not only are they not going to be experiencing that pain anymore, but now they have an opportunity to be in heaven with God. So we should rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. And that's Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. But why do we rejoice? We don't rejoice for no reason, but because we know that God is in control. We know that we have blessings as a Christian, and we rejoice for that. And we rejoice because of the future and hope that we have as children of God. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 16 says, rejoice evermore. We also rejoice because we can be confident in our salvation. One of the passages we can take from our Wednesday night Bible study, 1 John chapter 2, verse 28 says, and now, little children, abide in him, that when he appears, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him at his coming. So these are the steps we've talked about tonight and how we handle bad news. Verify, act, pray, think, talk, accept, and rejoice. Now, if you're not a Christian tonight, or you're a Christian and maybe your life is not right with God, I've got bad news for you. And that is that you're lost. But there's good news as well. The good news is you have a chance for salvation. If you're not a Christian, you need to verify that your soul's condition. You need to accept the bad news and the good news, the good news of salvation, that Jesus died for your sins, that you can be baptized for the remission of those sins. You need to act on the verification of this bad news. You need to believe and confess that Jesus is the Christ. Then you can pray for forgiveness of sins when sometimes you fall short of His glory. You can think on God's Word and you can study it. You can talk with other Christians and be encouraged on your walk towards heaven. And finally, you can rejoice in your salvation. If you're here this evening and you're not a child of God, and if you need the prayers of the brethren on your behalf, this is an opportunity. Come now while we stand and sing.